We were talking about the fact that the cell cycle seems to be controlled by some sort of chemical signals. That's where we ended last time. And in 13, we see a representation of a cell cycle, kind of like a lamp timer that turns lamps on and off with the little red pieces of plastic that you put in at certain times to throw the switch. Well, here are these little red gates represent what are called checkpoints. Now, checkpoints are not actual structures in a cell. Checkpoints are really just sets of chemical conditions. And unless those particular chemical conditions exist, then the cell won't proceed through the checkpoint. In other words, like this G1 checkpoint, the cell will stay in G1 until conditions are correct chemically for it to go through the checkpoint and go on to the S phase, and similarly for other important checkpoints. Now, how this works, we're not going to get too bogged down in the details of. We're still figuring it out also, which depends on the cell type and the checkpoint, but we'll look at a little bit of a detail. First, though, in 14, we see that a lot of times a cell will be able to go through a checkpoint. Normally, it will, especially in cells that undergo division quite easily, like skin cells, for instance. You lose billions every day. You have to replace billions. So skin cells have relatively short cell cycles, and they relatively easily satisfy the conditions of the G1 checkpoint to go on to divide. On the other hand, a typical neuron doesn't divide for your whole lifetime. It will stay, actually, in G1 and never really meet the G1 checkpoint. And when that happens, we actually rename G1 as G0, just to indicate it's indefinitely in this part of the cell cycle and will not proceed. Fifteen gives us a little bit of detail of how this can work. In the top, you see two graphs in one, really. It's the blue and the purple traces are graphing two different things. But the higher it is on the y-axis, the greater it is. Well, one of these, the blue one, which is the smooth curve, is MPF activity. And MPF is an acronym that stands for mitogen promoting factor. A mitogen, well, first of all, a factor. There's all kinds of factors in biology. Factor usually refers to some sort of protein, like growth factors, for instance, which we'll talk about in a minute. A mitogen gets its name, gen, like in generation, or genesis means create. Mitogen is something that induces or brings about mitosis. So it spurs cell division somehow. And notice on this graph that we're not looking at one cell cycle here, we're looking at several cell cycles. So generations of cells, right? Each arrow here is one cell cycle with G1, S, G2, and mitotic phase. And look and notice that MPF activity is very low for most of the cell cycle and then spikes during the M phase. Well, I just told you that MPF induces mitosis, so that should make sense. But also graphed here is the concentration of something called cyclin. And it doesn't stay low and then jump up all of a sudden. It gradually increases, notice, from S through G2, and then reaches a high point and then crashes. But when that cyclin concentration gets critically high, that's when you all of a sudden see MPF activity. In other words, that's what brings on cell division. And the bottom figure explains this a little bit. MPF, which I just defined as mitogen promoting factor, is really a two-part thing, as you see here. Part purple, part blue. The two parts to it are cyclin and CDK. Cyclin is a protein. CDK is also a protein, but CDK stands for cyclin-dependent kinase. Kinases are, there's all kinds of different kinases, but kinases, as you can tell by the name, are enzymes. It's an important category of enzymes, kinases. They activate things by phosphorylating them. Anyway, CDK is one part. Cyclin is the other part, and if they get together, they make up a mitogen promoting factor. And only when you have the intact MPF, the mitogen promoting factor, does it actually cause cell division to occur. Well, CDK is always present throughout the whole cell cycle. But CDK by itself doesn't do anything unless it binds to cyclin, as you see here. And that's why cyclin, which gets produced a little bit at a time and accumulates gradually, when it gets to a high level, it will become much more likely for the CDK that's all been there all along to now bind to the cyclin, which is now in greater concentration, so that you all of a sudden have activated MPF, which causes the cell division. And as soon as that cell division happens, which is in the M phase, of course, then the cyclin gets degraded in the cells that the one cell splits into, so that they won't immediately go into their own cell division, right? They'll go normally through their G1, S, and G2 before getting there. Okay, 16. We're looking here at an experiment you can do on animal cells, for instance, like from your own body. If you isolate some cells, like have been done here with the scalpels, and then suspend them in a nutrient solution so that they can remain alive, you can then plate them out, put the cells onto a medium, just some substance that on which they grow, or won't grow, depending on what the medium is. But in this case, you have the same thing being done. You're plating the cells out into two different containers. The blue container has a medium that contains everything that will keep the cells alive, basically feeds them. So they don't die, but notice they don't multiply. They're just kept alive. The pink medium has all the stuff the blue does, but in addition to that, it has PDGF, which stands for platelet-derived growth factor. This is another factor, another protein, but in this case, growth factor has the effect of, it's named for growth, of course, but growth in multicellular organisms means producing more cells, right? So growth factor is another chemical signal that induces cells to undergo cell division. So in this bottle, the cells that are plated on this medium not only stay alive, they start proliferating. They divide, create a lot more cells, which is what proliferation means, increase in numbers. So that's more evidence of chemical basis of control of the cell cycle. Now 17 is a little bit related to that. But this points out what is the definitions of what are called anchorage dependence and density dependent inhibition, as you see. Anchorage dependence refers to the fact that some cells will not be spurred on to divide and to produce new cells, in other words, unless they are connected to a surface. In other words, if you had these cells in a solution, just in a flask, the appropriate solution might keep them alive, but they wouldn't divide. Even if you gave them growth factor, they wouldn't. Because they also have to have the additional signal of realizing that they are anchored to a surface, which they will be if you put them onto a surface. All right, so that's what anchorage dependence refers to. And you know, if they have the right nutrients and they're anchored, then they will start dividing, which means new cells are being added, and the new cells are starting to fill the spaces between the original cells. This is exactly what happens, by the way, when you have a break in your skin. When you have a wound, you're removing some cells from a surface, and the existing cells are spurred on to create new cells to fill the holes. Okay? But that then brings up density-dependent inhibition. Inhibition means turning it off. So, yes, these cells will be spurred on to divide, but only until all the holes are filled. Once they realize, because they're all touching each other, that they've filled the space, then that turns off the cell division, because they don't want to keep dividing once they've completed the membrane, the layer of cells. And if you scoop some more out, then they will temporarily, some of the surrounding cells that realize they're not butted up against other cells will start dividing again until they fill that space and turn back off. That's density-dependent inhibition. Now, that's how it's supposed to happen. If something goes wrong with the control mechanism for the cell cycle, like the ability to produce one of these chemical signals, for instance, if a cell loses that ability by a mutation, for instance, then cells will not realize, so to speak, that they're not supposed to keep dividing. So they've lost the density-dependent inhibition in this bottom right picture. Even though they've filled all the spaces, they just keep dividing. And that is what cancer is. That's how a tumor forms. Because one cell originally underwent some sort of mutation, the DNA changed for sunlight or whatever reason. There's all kinds of things that can lead to mutation. And it just happened to be that that mutation was in a gene that's involved in producing a protein that is an important part of the control of the cell cycle. So if it happens just right, the cell will not be able to know that it's not supposed to divide, and it will go through the cell cycle and divide. Well, the problem with this, you know, one cell, no big deal. One defective cell, no big deal. But the problem is, it doesn't realize it's defective, and it goes through the cell cycle, splits into two cells that are identical to it. So the two cells that are produced are now both defective as well, and they won't be able to realize that they're supposed to shut off. So they'll both undergo cell division to create four cells, and then eight. They're all cancerous. And that's why it will grow out of control. Cancer is a genetic disorder because it's caused by a defect to the DNA. Genetic doesn't mean that it's heritable. You don't pass on cancer. But something that happens to your DNA during your life causes the cancer. And the last slide, also having to do with cancer, shows you what's happening using breast cancer as a just one example, but basically the same thing can happen with any kind of cancer. Like I said, it starts with a single cell, invisibly small, but you notice a tumor eventually because all of the descendants of that cell are defective, so they keep making new cells as well. And a localized tumor, which is how things start, doesn't really have any bad effect at first, but the bigger it gets, the more likely it is going to interfere with the normal functioning of the surrounding cells in whatever organ it's in. And so, that's when you usually have a diagnosis of cancer, which is why early detection is so important. If the tumor keeps growing, then meaning that if it's not addressed, if it's not killed by surgery or radiation or chemotherapy or whatever, it will not only get bigger, but it will become more likely, since there's a bigger population of cancerous cells, that some of those cells will just randomly break off from the tumor and get carried by fluids that go through the body, like blood or lymph, and take up residence in some other organ and start a brand new tumor there. And that's what's called metastasis, which is much more serious because it gets harder and harder to treat the more organs get tumors in them. So that's what we say when we say the cancer has gone metastatic. Well, that is the chapter. Let me switch recordings.